Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, I can't imagine more diverse theatrical experiences than I had this past week. First, I attended a matinee starring a giant ape who has been portrayed so many times on film that he deserves his own studio. Then I saw a pair of 90-minute one-acts based on this country's most famous duo of explorers. Think Hollywood blockbuster versus indie. Finally, I saw a star-studded trio on, but also sort of off, Broadway. Well, let us start, as I did, with King Kong. Now, this production hails from Australia and was penned by Jack Thorne. He recently won a Tony for his script of the Harry Potter plays. Well, let me say up front that no, it's not a good musical. In fact, the music is totally forgettable, but neither is it quite as bad as you've heard. The story is the same. Movie maker goes to Skull Island and ends up discovering a monstrous animal with Barnum-like visions. There isn't a human being alive who wouldn't want to see him, he claims. He wraps the poor guy up and ships him across the ocean to become a freak show in New York City. This isn't a movie, it's theater, says the impresario. Well, that's a rationale if I've ever heard one. In Act Two, we are in the show, within a movie, within a play, etc., etc. While the swoony, pale love interest is recalled from cinematic history as Faye Ray, then Jessica Lange, then Naomi Watts, here she is played by Christiane Pitts, an African-American dynamo. This King Kong has, in fact, become her story. At least I'm not some man's property. I'm no damsel in distress, she sings. She saves the monster, gets the job, and the best numbers, of which there are maybe two. What matters here is Kong himself, who is 20 feet tall, weighs thousands of pounds, and is maneuvered by a talented team of puppet masters who blend into the action fluidly. His entrance is dramatic, as is his curtain call. Well, who is this show for? The tourist crowd seemed satisfied, and I assume those with children over the holiday season will keep it running, but not for long, I predict. The mouth of the monster may roar, but word of mouth, not so much. Now, to the other extreme, an audacious experience entitled Lewiston Clarkston at the Downtown Rattlestick Theater. Now, this is a pair of one acts by Samuel Hunter that previously played only independently, but since they sort of share a theme, it makes sense to put them on the same bill. This production is the first time that Lewiston and Clarkston have been done together. Credit to director Davis McCallum and the artistic director of the Rattlestick, Daniela Topol, for not only doing these plays back-to-back, but totally reconfiguring the space. That means reducing the seats. There are just 51 for this production. The audience surrounds the six actors, three in the first show, three in the second, almost feeling we are part of the intensity on stage, though, of course, there is no actual stage. And it is intense. Let me also mention that there is a 35-minute break for a communal dinner right there. The conceit here is that a character in each play has some distant familial connection to either Meriwether Lewis or William Clark, who, of course, paved the path to the Pacific from 1804 to 1806. Without giving much away, the first deals with a grandmother and her suddenly reappearing granddaughter, each suffering the repercussions of a suicide. The second, much more harrowing tale is about two young gay men and a meth-addicted mother. Sound like fun so far? The one act share a similar area in Idaho, concerns about the risk of losing cherished property, and the idea of how well-meaning parents can do terrible harm. They even share the building of a tent right before our eyes. There is a bit of history about Lewis and Clark here. How Lewis died is a source of debate that makes sense. And overall, this riveting evening, which has been extended for several more weeks at least, leaves you hoping the words of one character are not true. This is a terrible time to be alive, he says. There's nothing left to discover. Well, finally, I did discover that Daniel Radcliffe, Bobby Cannavale, and Cherry Jones can take just about any line and bring it to life. which is good since their play is called The Lifespan of a Fact and is continuing a run at Studio 54 through mid-January. Now, this is based on a book by the characters portrayed by Cannavale and Radcliffe. The former is a distinguished man of words. "I don't write articles, I write essays," he insists. But he's been known to take liberties, we are warned. Radcliffe is a Harvard grad intern assigned to fact-check a piece by Cannavale's character for a magazine. Cherry Jones is the editor who has to referee between the two men. "You may not be a journalist," she says, "but I am, and this could be a career ender for both of us." For an 85-minute play, there is a lot to chew on here, especially for folks like me who have wanted to wring the necks of fact-checkers and simultaneously being saved by them. But even if you are not in this rarefied field, you can't help but be entertained by these three pros on stage and thereafter wondering if you can be reading something that is truthful without it being completely accurate. "The wrong facts get in the way of a story," says the writer as he fights for his version. The actual playwriting gets a bit muddled in the end, and some are frustrated with its final ambiguity, but overall there's a lot to laugh at and think about. And as I think back on my week, it's interesting that the latter two shows both dealt with the issue of suicide, at least tangentially, were minimal in nature, and featured a cast of just three. And let me tell you, Jill, they had a lot more impact than that immense set, huge cast, and very large ape.
So let me ask you, because, you know, I can't quite... Well, I can say that the paper of record was a little bit cutting, harsh about the big ape. Is there any element of entertainment to it?
Yeah, there is actually, I mean that sincerely. And there were a lot of people who talked about the way the New York Times reviewed that show, with both the critics trying to one up each other on how much they hated the show.
Yeah, I saw that, and I just I always remember. This was decades ago, and it was really I think to this day, the worst thing I have ever seen. And that didn't stop the fact that it was in previews. I'm not even sure it opened.
Yeah.
It was that bad. But the fact is, and there were names attached to it, real live people who have gone on to obviously forget that, but they probably laugh about it in their...
Yeah.
Spare time. And it's what is really inefficient is not recognizing the amount of blood, sweat, tears, life, and attempt and money that goes into any of this, even if it's just ghastly.
I know. And I felt that too. And this is a lot of money, by the way. The budget is enormous. And it is a huge cast. But yeah, you do feel it. I brought a friend with me, and he said, you know, God bless these dancers. They're up there, you know, doing their thing and trying their best. You know, is it a gimmick thing? Yeah, it's similar in a way to Jekyll and Hyde. I think that was the one that also came from Australia and also got horrible reviews, but played for quite a while because, let's face it, people from out of town, you know, it sounds like fun. And I listened to people. I didn't see a lot of walkouts. I listened to people later, even on the subway going home. I could see their playbills. I knew what they were talking about. And they were saying, oh, I really liked her. And this was, you know, obviously I can't recommend it. It's not a show for the, oh, God, dare I say, intelligentsia, you know.
No, but this is the thing that I'm just all over and cannot wait to see. Is whether there is a split between the intelligentsia and entertainment, because the more time I spend out here, the more time I spend here in even Sharon, Connecticut, the more I see a
crossover between us.
No, an interest in being entertained, you know. There are a lot of people who are ready to, and who have been getting on with their lives for ages now, and then there are some who just still aren't, and sort of need to relitigate.
Yeah, I just want to get out and have a good time. I mean, I said it was my day of the from the ridiculous to the sublime, though I'm not saying the Rattlestick show is sublime. It's difficult, but it's still very exciting, you know, inventive theater. And this is after coming from King Kong. But, you know, there's room for both. There's room for Ferryman. There's room for King Kong. There's room for, you know.
How's Ferryman selling?
Yeah.
How is the Ferryman selling?
The Ferryman is doing well, but I will tell you, every time I go to the ticket booth, which is almost every Wednesday and Saturday now, partially as a reporter because I'm very interested, there's always Ferryman tickets. So, you know, it's which kills people who say, oh, God, I paid $300 for those months ago because they heard about it in London or whatever. So there really are seats. It's doing well. I mean, the lifespan of a fact had plenty of cheap seats and empty seats, even though it's star-studded and had very nice reviews. You know, over Christmas season, I'm sure things will get crowded. The big sellers right now apparently are To Kill a Mockingbird, believe it or not. It's doing really, really well. Even though it doesn't officially open till the middle of December, and Network, which I am going to see in a couple of weeks, that's doing well. But you know, one is based on a big. Well, they're both based on.
They are both huge works in the public consciousness.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. With big names, you got Jeff Daniels as Atticus, and you've got Bryan Cranston. As we know who, you're mad at, he's mad at hell as hell. He's not going to take it anymore. So anyway, it's a very interesting time right now. I mean, when I think back of last fall, when there was nothing new, it was arguably the worst fall season in Broadway history. The only new show was a terrible one at the Roundabout, Paris Wife. But really, there's no... I haven't even had time to see everything, and I'm trying to catch up. I like to do the small, I like to do the big, and then something like Lifespan, which is kind of in the middle. It's a Broadway show, like Lincoln Center. It qualifies as Broadway, but it's rather intimate. It's Studio 54, you know, so I don't know. There's small, medium, and large, and there's something for everybody.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.